It's Sunday morning. Time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter here on WGN Radio. Thank you for joining me one day before the big eclipse. I know you've been hearing all about it. I won't go into where you can see it and those kind of things because everyone else is talking about it. But I will say that 7 years ago, I had the pleasure of seeing the eclipse high in the Rocky Mountains of Idaho. It was August of 2017, and the day broke clear, cloudless, and warm, and it heated up during the day, and we climbed up into the mountains for an unobstructed view of what was going to be the total eclipse, just as we're going to have roll through Carbondale, Illinois tomorrow. And hopefully it's an unobstructed view. The weather forecast right now looks pretty good. Let's hope it holds. It's going to have a window between rain on both ends of it, but hopefully for everyone traveling to see it, you'll be able to see the full eclipse. So we climbed up this mountain, and for those of you who aren't going to see it tomorrow, I'll just recount a little bit of what it's like, because it is spiritual. And if you still have time to make plans to go see the eclipse, it's worth it. We climbed up this mountain. There was nothing around us, no civilization around us. And we stood up there, and it was windy and sunny and bright, and ever so slowly, and of course we had the glasses, ever so slowly, the sun began to become blotted out. It started out in the lower left-hand corner, as I recall it, and it went across the sun. And as it did so, the first hint of shadow, the birds stopped chirping, and they stopped flying. It was the most eerie feeling. We were hearing this theatrical symphony of birds singing up in the mountains and the prairie grass. It went quiet. And then as the moon began to move across the sun and block it more and more, the temperature started to fall. And it didn't just fall by a couple degrees. It plummeted. I'll say it plummeted from near 80 to feeling like it was in the 50s. Of course, I didn't have a thermometer to know, but it felt like it fell like that. And then at the total eclipse, when everything was blacked out, and it was night enough that if a car was going down the road, dark enough if a car was going down the road, it would have needed its headlights. As the temperature fell that far, everything was quiet. There wasn't a peep, not only among the group of us watching it, but in nature, not a peep. And then the wind came up, and the wind, it was not much wind when it started, and then it began to blow. And as the temperature continued to fall, the wind continued to rise, and we were standing up there in shirt sleeves, really freezing now, because the temperature had gone into the 50s, and the wind was blowing, not a gale, but it was blowing maybe 15 miles an hour or so, which made it even feel colder, and we're on top of a mountain. And then as the total eclipse moved on and began to wane, the wind dropped, and the temperature began to quickly rise. And by the time the moon had cleared the sun on the right corner as it moved away, the birds were singing and birds were flying. And this whole thing didn't take 20 minutes, 25 minutes maybe. It was so spiritual to be standing there. And then we all started talking. No one talked this entire time. We just sort of looked around and looked up at it through our glasses. And it was one of those moments you'll never forget. And I'll never see it again. And coming through Illinois the way it's coming through now, it'll be a long time before it happens on that exact path again. So if you have a chance, go see it. It's one of those things that you won't forget. But what struck with me now, 7 years later from seeing the only time I've ever seen that total solar eclipse, is just how quiet it became and how the temperature fell, birds stopped singing, and the wind came up. And I would offer, if you're going to go see the eclipse, don't go park on the side of a road and stand there with cars going by. That is not the experience. You want to be able to get away from traffic, be able to get away from noise. So good luck tomorrow if you're going to see it. I'm sure we'll be talking about it next weekend to some extent, but that's my memory of of the clips that I saw 7 years ago. Big announcement by Ducks Unlimited Canada, and it's a wonderful announcement. Earth Day's coming on April 22nd, and in celebration of Earth Day, Ducks Unlimited Canada has done something that hasn't happened in Canada, maybe ever before. They have arranged for the distribution of Wings Over Water, which is this epic IMAX film about the prairie wetlands and birds and how important the prairies are to bird life. Some 70% of North America's birds depend on the prairies for their existence. And they've arranged for more than 70 theaters in Canada, which is pretty much most of the giant screen IMAX theaters in Canada, to show Wings Over Water on Earth Day and then to continue to show it all the way until the end of May. Wings Over Water has won virtually every award the giant screen film industry can give for a film. Ducks Unlimited United States, Ducks Unlimited Inc., and Audubon were drivers in the production of the film. And as I've said many times, I was involved with the Max McGraw Wildlife Foundation. McGraw spearheaded the entire project, the idea being to take conservation to the mainstream, to enable literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of school-aged children and adults to learn about the prairie wetlands as only you can learn about an IMAX form. It was an idea that had never been done for conservation before, and Ducks, led by McGraw with Ducks Unlimited and Audubon along board, we launched this film. It's been an incredible success at raising awareness for the prairies. It's done part of what it was supposed to do, which is to help people in Congress understand the value of the North American Wetlands Conservation Act and how important it is to wetlands conservation all around North America. And then Ducks Unlimited Canada to pick up on this and to arrange for more than 70 theaters across Canada, really for the next 45 days after Earth Day on the 22nd, to be able to have this film, Wings Over Water, where hopefully almost every Canadian school child will be able to go and see it. It's a credit to Ducks Unlimited Canada. It's a credit to the idea that Ducks Unlimited and McGraw had in bringing this film into being to the beginning, and with Audubon. So it's been a home run for conservation, and it's just one of those things that makes you feel good about the world that we're doing things that are making a difference. And so I'm going to go to a break now. When I come back, two subjects caught my interest in the past week. One of them is what's going on in Vermont. Really, an incredibly interesting story about how Vermont wants to change the makeup of its wildlife commission. And then I might talk for a moment about, if I have time, about an interesting story that's come out about maybe why ground is sinking on the East Coast. Be back in just a moment with much more on the Great Outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go, worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter here on WGN Radio. Thank you for being with me this morning. And as promised before the break, the headline reads, "Should wildlife advocates help set hunting rules in Vermont?" ? This is something that's been going on across the country. I sometimes call it, as others do, ballot box biology. I didn't coin that phrase. I'm copying it from Chris Dorsey, but it certainly applies. this is going on in the state of Washington, where the governor wants to appoint people to the Wildlife Commission who have no background in wildlife, and they're animal rights activists. And now, on the other side of the country, Vermont. Vermont is considering a bill that would add people who don't hunt to the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Board. And this has, needless to say, become quite controversial. The quote is, it's controversial for both progressive politics and rural traditions. I would ask the question, why would you want people who neither hunt nor fish to be on a board that sets the hunting and fishing regulations to begin with? And moreover, why don't we let the people who are paid and have the professional criteria to set the regulations because of their background and their study and the information they have, why don't we let them determine what science says that we ought to do when it comes to hunting and fishing? Why are we making this now increasingly across America something that has nothing to do with science and has everything to do with politics and the emotions of people? And for many, many years, I served on the Illinois Conservation Board, and I did so under three governors. The Department of Natural Resources came to the board and said, these are our proposals for hunting and fishing regulations across the state, deer hunting, duck hunting, fishing seasons, Lake Michigan, the whole thing. And then they would make a presentation as to the why they set the seasons the way they did, and they would present all the data. And the job of the conservation board was to consider this, and unless there was something terribly out of line, was to approve it. It wasn't the job of the conservation board to throw the science out the window and say, you know, we don't think you should hunt deer in Illinois, and we really don't care what the data is. We're not going to let you hunt deer. And that wouldn't happen because the conservation board was made up of people who were engaged in the outdoors, who were hunters and anglers. Vermont now wants to add people to the state board who don't hunt or fish. And the proposal says that we want to add them because they have a stake in how the state's wildlife is managed, because individuals who don't hunt and fish also enjoy watching wildlife, and that they should ensure that there is ample wildlife to be watched and viewed by the public and not over-harvested by hunters. That is code for the Humane Society and anti-hunting. The regulators in Vermont are no different than in any other state. They are professionally trained, and they have come up with season regulations based upon population dynamics of species and how the species should be managed. And yet, and I'm quoting here, even people who don't care about wildlife care about democracy and believe it shouldn't be a privileged special interest group making policies, says the president of the Protect Our Wildlife, which is an advocacy group, which is interestingly very much aligned with the Humane Society. So on the other side, hunters are saying, which is correct, there's nothing wrong with the current system, a 14-member volunteer board, which is made up of hunters, trappers, and fishermen from every county in the state and is appointed by the governor. The board fleshes out the regulations based on laws enacted by the legislature with input from the public and state scientists. They say it's been a success from the beginning. Everyone is for abundant and flourishing wildlife. And so there is no reason, in their view, that you should have people who don't want people to hunt and fish on boards. This is going across all the states. It's increasingly occurring. And unfortunately, it's part of the future. And if we're not going to have science-based natural resource management, then we really don't need departments of natural resources spending tens of millions of dollars every year gathering scientific information so that we can make informed decisions. We might as well just go, as Chris Dorsey and others say, to ballot box biology. And the result of that is going to be the complete tearing down, absolute elimination of science-based natural resource management. And it'll be the public who don't have the data, and many of whom don't have the background, making decisions as to how we manage our wildlife natural resources. And that'll be the end of the North American model, which has been a success since its beginning in conservation and restoration. And I hear all the time, well, I don't hunt or fish, but I really care about the outdoors. And I know you do. but it's people who hunt and fish who are paying the majority of the bills that are funding outdoor research and recreation, funding conservation groups. If it wasn't for hunting, Ducks Unlimited probably wouldn't have very many members. The same is true of almost every conservation organization. It is not to in any way diminish the love of people who don't hunt and fish and who love the outdoors. And I have the utmost respect for that. I have a daughter who loves the outdoors. She loves to fish. She doesn't choose to hunt. She has every bit as much right to care about the outdoors as my other children, who both love to hunt and fish. But the point is, when it comes to where the financial interests come from, unless the non-hunting public and the non-fishing public are willing to pay the fees that people who hunt and fish are willing to pay, then we have an economic shortfall in the tens of millions of dollars that will affect, it won't eliminate agencies, but it'll greatly affect the kind of research they're able to do. And so this is the article is called Vermont Brouhaha, and it's contagious. It's spreading to other states. Vermont says, look what Washington is doing, and somebody else will say, look what Vermont's doing. I just hope that as a country, we recognize we have a wildlife profession, people who are incredibly dedicated to their work, and their work shouldn't be demeaned by individuals or agendas that have no data and have a conflicting agenda, which basically is to stop hunting and fishing, unfortunately. I've got just a moment left. I will talk next week about this interesting concept of, is the East Coast sinking? It's a phenomenally interesting concept. And I'll also talk a little bit about the Great Lakes, but I'll shift with just the very brief time I have left to, we did have the beginnings of some relief to the drought across the prairies. Last week, I talked about how we are looking at one of the most catastrophic droughts since the mid-80s and its effect on birds. Potentially, we saw a little bit of relief this past week with some storms across the prairies. It has a long, long way to go, unfortunately. And also, we're hearing more rumblings out of Manitoba, where it appears the efforts by the now dethroned administration to limit Americans to come hunting in Manitoba was actually much more deep-seated than had initially been thought. And we're hearing from people who are in the outfitting industry in Manitoba who are saying that this had nothing to do with Americans actually hunting in Manitoba, but had a lot more to do with the interests of a small group of people in advancing themselves monetarily, notably the guides of Manitoba, the outfitters of Manitoba when it came to waterfowling. I still maintain the Manitoba laws are going to be rescinded, and hopefully soon, but there's more information coming out which demonstrates, as we pointed out right from the beginning, this was not based on science. This was based on a financial interest of a very few people who had a strong connection to the government in Manitoba, and they won. They've done a lot of damage. I don't think they're going to be successful long term. Thank you for listening. I'll be back next Sunday morning with much more on the great outdoors. Enjoy the eclipse tomorrow if you're going to go see it. And I hope that you'll have the same magical feelings I did 7 years ago when I saw my first total solar eclipse. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago in America, 720 WGN.